This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life these days. And I'm going to jump right in with reading a few headlines from some news articles. So first, son of Indiana pastor sentenced to prison for child pornography. This was Breitbart News. 24-year-old Indiana pastor's son was sentenced to prison on Friday after pleading guilty in regard to a child exploitation case. And these are all recent articles I'm going to be hitting you with. Memphis pastor, business owner, second man arrested in sex crime involving child porn. A second man is now arrested and charged with crimes relating to the sexual abuse of a minor. That's from Fox 13. 77-year-old pastor sentenced to prison for multiple sex crimes against young boys. This was a 77-year-old man sentenced to serve at least 10 years in prison. He was convicted December of 2025 of three counts of this crime. 77-year-old pastor. And then the last one, a former Fritch mayor and a local pastor facing child exploitation charge. This was Amarillo, Texas. A former mayor of Fritch is facing serious charges involving a child. He is a 39-year-old man. So every single day in the U.S., a pastor, a ministry leader, somebody in some kind of ministry position is being exposed or arrested for adultery or sexual abuse or some kind of felony, including child porn. And my guest today is going to have some unique expertise in this area because he's been a pastor and he's been in prison ministry. So Mark Skalberg has over 40 years of pastoral experience, serving as the lead pastor of Canyons Community Church in Castle Rock, Colorado, Woodman Valley Chapel here in Colorado Springs, Calvary Chapel, and others. He has served as the ministry director for Salem in Colorado Springs, and since 1992, Mark has been the founder and director of the Starting Over on the Inside ministry, with over 1,500 on-site graduates in 12 Colorado prisons and over 51,000 graduates on tablets. He has also served as a chaplain for the Colorado Department of Corrections since 2015. Mark, welcome to the program.
Mike, good to see you. Thank you. That was quite the intro.
Thank you. So, Mark, when you hear these news article headlines, what goes through your mind?
Well, I'm sad, you know, just really, really sad. Sad and disgusting all at the same time. And it's interesting that you brought that up. I know what you do, and so God bless you for what you're doing, a restoration of all those sexual sins. And, I mean, that's got to be the toughest piece of ministry to do what you do. But the irony to that for me is I'm a chaplain at Fremont here in Colorado, and it's the highest population of sex offenders in Colorado. And it's mainly because the therapy that they provide to the sex offenders at Fremont is really, that's the main prison that would do that in Colorado. So a lot of the people that I know are sex offenders, you know, from Fremont, and they are also people that get out. And so the implications, you know, are pretty legion as far as how big those implications are when they get out. Mm. Yeah. But clarification, Starting Over Workshop's been around since 92, but Starting Over on the Inside is started in 21, just FYI. So that fruit of the numbers you mentioned is just in the last 5 years. Mm. Yeah.
So when you hear about pastors being arrested and sent to prison, and you're a pastor, what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we were having that discussion with the guy here, and that this is, unfortunately, is nothing new. But I think it has – it's certainly not only the sinful piece to it all and the volition to do that, but I think it reflects a lack of leadership structure that sets up for those falls. And I think the church has some accountability. I mean, the board, maybe even the congregation, because some of those people have fallen, and particularly here in the city of Colorado Springs, they've fallen because there was a lack of leadership structure that would give accountability to the leaders that are untouchable.
Hmm. So what does untouchable look like?
I think what it looks like, there's tiers on a big church. I'm talking about a big church. It could be a small church, but when you're a big church, big could be 2,000, maybe 1,000 more or 5,000 more. The upper tier people or the executive type pastors are kind of separated from the rest of the staff. Even if the staff's 100 people, 80 people, whatever, and there's not, I'm not saying it's every church, but some of the lack or the absence of accountability with the leadership and particularly the board is sadly lacking.
So what should accountability look like when it comes to sexual sin that so many people are falling prey to?
Well, I think, as you know, because of what you've been doing for so many years, you know, I think there's a distinction, not the sin, but there's a distinction from a person being in leadership or in a person being a lay person or just a person that, you know, attends the church that has the issue they get arrested for. But I think, as I just mentioned, I think those sins were there before, before they came into type A church or whatever. So it's not like it's nothing new, unfortunately, to them. But I think there's environments that could set that up. And I think that's why there needs to be teams that in a church setting of structure that could hopefully alleviate those things from happening. For example, as you know, in the last, 25 years, churches, reasonable sized churches, they don't have, there's no closed doors. There's glass on the doors. You know, the pastors are openly seen. There's nobody closing the door with a female in the room. So there's no, you know, accusation. For me as a pastor, I've never been with a woman by myself anywhere at any time. The last 42 years. But that's my commitment. You know, I'm not going to have somebody make an accusation, even the accusation, because I made a choice to do that. And other people might disagree, but you know, that was Billy Graham's conviction. And I think there's a lot of reasonable pastors that have that same conviction.
Yeah, what we see is a lot of men get hooked at porn at the age of 8, and then they carry it all the way through their teens. They get married, they don't tell their wives until 10, 20, 30, 40, even 50 years later, they get caught. So what should not only screening a pastor, but helping him look like when he walks in the door?
Of course, you know more about this than I do. But there are some settings where certain, and I find it to be more prevalent, not necessarily in main lines, but more prevalent, it seems to me, in main lines where there's been a sexual accusation of that pastor in another location. In another city, and they were let go quietly because no one wants to talk about it, and there's a non-disclosure, and they leave, and they're paid, and the victim is if there is one, has been paid. So they can't say anything. They move on to another church, and they take their sin with them. You know, and it's true, you know, some of those sins, like the scripture says, your sin's going to find you out one way or the other. But, you know, there could be someone who, like this whole thing in Colorado Springs at New Life with Gateway and all that stuff, of stuff that happened 30, 40 years ago. It still happened. And, you know, no one seems to know about it, or at least they said they didn't. But I think, you know, like I just said, your sin's going to find you out. So I don't know the answer to your question. If there is an answer, because the culture is so saturated with sexual everything from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. And, you know, I do think, like you say, you've got programs and stuff to intervene, and there's prevention and there's all those kind of things. But some of it has so much to do with the culture, obviously, and with the media allurement of all those different things. I mean, to me, it kind of makes me sick, you know, because every single commercial stops at, it's either about erectile dysfunction or something related to sex. And so the whole world is spinning around it all day long. And, you know, if you're a believer, hopefully you can, you know, not conform to the image of this world, but try to be different and say, I'm not watching that. I'm not listening to that. I'm not going there. And if you choose not to, you know, little by little, as you well know, I can rationalize almost anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that, but I do think that the, depending on the states, there's a lot of high consequences for sex offenders. I mean, when they get out, unlike another offender that wasn't a sex offender, their role, the Department of Corrections, not just here in Colorado, is to protect the public. Mm. And some people are more lax, and I don't even want to use the word forgiveness, but they're more lax in what they think a sex offender should have to go through when they get out. And the statistics aren't good. They reoffend, like 90% of the time.
Oh, 90% recidivism?
I'm not talking about returning. I'm just the crime itself or the sexual sin. And, you know, there's some states have used castration or they consider castration as an answer to the problem. I mean, the recidivism is still 52%, by the way, in the United States out of 2.2 million state prisoners. Mm. But, you know, certain states might be a little better, but that spins – that does – is the average is 52%. But, again – I don't know what the answer is, but you're right. You said 8 years old, watch pornography. I mean, these and even unfortunately, sad to say, in the prisons, pornography is all over the place. Mm. And it's sold, you know, for a take a look. Now, this is not every prison. Here in the United States, we have a law, a guideline called PREA. It stands for Pre-Rape Elimination Act. And the government, the federal government funded it, and that's what brings all the cameras everywhere in the prisons today. So there's cameras in the bathroom, they're in the living units, they're everywhere. Mm. So like in Colorado, you put your arm around someone, you can be taken to the hole. Mm. So rape has almost been eliminated in most states. Mm. Now, some other states that don't necessarily have, need to mention, they don't – if you don't adhere to the PREA laws, they will yank the cameras out of the facility. Mm. And then it becomes open game.
So are they selling porn in Fremont, the sex offender prison?
Well, I mean, I don't know where they get it, but something's smuggled just like all the drugs, okay? Oh. They're smuggled by usually vendors, okay? And I hate to say maybe even some employees. But when you give me an idea in Colorado, a Department of Corrections has 6,500 employees. Mm. So when you have that many employees, not everybody's altruistic. Mm. So unfortunately, yeah, I mean, they can't have pornography in the room. If they were found with pornography, they're thrown in the hole for 4 to 5 weeks if they find it.
So as you mentioned, the culture is saturating us with sex. And in 2018, I put billboards up here in the Springs that said,
I remember.
Struggle with porn, you're not alone. So there were 66% of the men in the church. Mm-hmm. And 80% of the contacts we got, the comments we got were basically parents reaming me.
Really?
Because how dare I force them to tell their 9-year-old kid what porn is? So why is it we're so – the culture is saturating us with sex. Sex is all over the Bible. God made it. Mm-hmm. Why are we so afraid of talking about this openly Sunday morning?
I think it's a good question. I think that guy – I forget his name. I had interviewed him on the radio and had him speak a couple times. He wrote Holy Sexuality. I forget his name now. But, you know, he kind of addresses that in the sense of you need, and he's got products and resources to start that education process with your children at that age. You know, it used to be in the old days, 25, 30 years ago, you tell them about sex, your child, from a Christian standpoint, when they're like 14, 15. Mm-hmm. You know, his thing, men know it's 8 or 9. You know, and I think that's great. But unless the parent or the church or wherever they get their information has heard that before, which, remember, it's not publicized. Like, who's saying that? Except for you and the few rare people out there. No, it needs to be a lot earlier. And in fact, for my own granddaughter, who's 3 years old, I've got a lot of this stuff already ready to give to my daughter. Not yet, but, you know, just to be aware, because I think it's so subtle and it's sold all day long. Everything from the transgender stuff, they're so stinking confused. Mm-hmm. Unless you can, I hate to say, you know, be set apart, you know, in the right way. Not to isolate our kids, but, you know, so that's why some people put their kids in Christian private school. You know, and even though I did all my life with all my kids, doesn't mean they're not exposed, you know, to this stuff. And so it's an ongoing saga, as you well know. But I do think if it's my kids, that's just me and you probably, I'm going to be educating them way earlier than what it used to be. You know, I remember Dennis Rainey and his thing and Folks in the Family was, you know, started having that conversation about 15, 16, 14, you know. Of course, now they can look back going, you know, maybe we should have said earlier. But I think there's that ignorance and that fear. It's just like the commercial you see on TV recently about – it's probably a Geico commercial saying, I want to tell your kid about sex, and the football player comes in and tells him. It's like – because nobody wants to talk about it. And so for most parents, as you probably know, my guess is they don't tell their kids about sex.
I tell parents if you have not given your child a sex talk by the time they're age of 8, it's too late. Because kids are getting smartphones now between the ages of 4 and 5.
Right.
And your sweet little Jimmy is going to school with Butch.
Right.
Who's going to show your kid what they've been finding online.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's noteworthy that some of the state's legislatures and even in the House conversations in the last few months has been talking about taking cell phones away from the schools. Okay, you can't have cell phones, or you can't have a cell phone or be on, what is it, TikTok or something, unless you prove you're 13 years old or whatever. I mean, there's restrictions come from the secular point of view. But I think it's the parents that have to put the brakes on. And at least for me, even though my daughter's 35 now, we and people were getting phones, you know, even in the private Christian school at 12, 13. And I said, no, you're not getting a cell phone until you're 17, period. And I'm grateful that I did. But they get addicted to it. And the irony is you can get addicted to the phone, then you're addicted to the things that you're exposed to. And next thing you know, one thing leads to the other, and they're in prison. You know, so we turn our head. And we, like you said, we don't want to communicate. Well, shame on us, you know. And but the sad thing, it's not coming from the front, you know, from the pulpits like they could. Mm-hmm. And typically, in a bigger church, they'd say, "What's the youth minister? You're going to say something? It's too late already." Oh. You know. But we had a big thing here in a couple churches in Colorado Springs, and it was a big thing maybe years ago, 15, 20 years. There was a porn thing, you know, in Colorado Springs and the conferences, and it just ran out of gas, you know. But and the police department was involved, Colorado Springs Police Department, and but it just kind of ran out of gas.
Hmm. I see some posts from you on Facebook where you got these pictures of groups of guys who are graduating from your program. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, starting over on the inside is a on-site program, but really the mission is to equip prisoners with the needed biblical principles and practical life skills to help them make that transition to the outside. Mm-hmm. And so the gospel is inside the 7-week session. So it's called Starting Over the Inside, which is a winsome enough title that it will draw unbelievers. So about 80% of the people that come don't know the Lord. They don't know Jesus inside the workshop. But then we slowly, you know, share various things in those 7 weeks, and we share the gospel in the second and third week. Mm-hmm. And so then it's a presentation by me, 35 minutes, whatever it is, and then small group discussion with trained facilitators. And so they have the ability to come to Christ. And when they do, I connect them to the chaplains of that prison. And so the neat thing is seeing people transformed. Mm-hmm. You can see it, you know, on their countenance. And so it's not like, you know, there's a talk and you walk, you know, you're doing a small group questions that, you know, spin out of the presentation. And we do talk about things that other people might not talk about in a Christian context. So the first week, I won't bore you with all the sessions, but the first week we talk about loss. And, you know, many inmates, let alone people, have never talked about their losses, be it death or whatever it may be, or sin or this storyline of drama. But a lot of prisoners have never really talked about their loss, and they're not going to talk about it in their living unit. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to talk out in the yard, and they might talk to mental health, you know, person. But when we talk about loss, hey, look, we all had losses, okay? But what do we do with that now? you know, we give some radical examples, but there's some levity, you know, mixed in there to keep their attention for sure. But then we talk about identity. Is your identity in your screwed up family, your sexual sin, your DOC number, you know, how many tattoos you had, and what gang you're in? You know, actually, you can have a different identity, and that identity can be in a relationship with God. It can change everything. And so it's a winsome message, and they go, you know, I'm sick of the same old, right? And what we say to them is starting over begins with me. It doesn't start with the DOC. It doesn't start with my mom, my parents, all this stuff. It starts with me. So I got to start answering the questions for myself. How do I process my loss? What is my identity? And then we talk about forgiveness, which there's a lot of ignorance about that biblically. Mm. And we talk about what forgiveness is, what it's not, what it can look like, and how it can restore relationships. And they want that. And they've never been had the opportunity. They might get little tidbits from here and there, but they've in the way it is presented is chronological. Mm. So when we talk about that, then we talk about the past. And when it comes to the forgiveness issue, you know, we talk about allowing God to forgive you, and then we also talk about you got to forgive yourself. But the biggest stumbling block for the inmate across the boards is they can't forgive themselves, or that's their struggle because they know their crime. They know why they're incarcerated, and they're paying the price. Mm-hmm. And they just can't find – if they don't understand the gospel, they won't be able to forgive themselves. Mm-hmm. So but once they do, though, and they get that, then we talk about, okay, now what? And then we actually talk about how you're going to prepare before you get out. Mm-hmm. But I believe if their heart's not changed and transformed by the Spirit of God, they're just going to be added to the recidivism rate. It's just going to be a rotating number, and they're going to be just like everybody else.
This is great because you're not just skimming the top.
No.
You're getting into the core root issues that are driving everything and keeping them in bondage.
Exactly. No, it's kind of heavy, really. The cool thing is what we usually have is about 30 people. You know, I have a minimum of 20. 30 people, so then we break into three groups or small groups of 10, okay? But when they bond over those questions with a trained facilitator, that's where the change starts to happen, not only the content what's said, but how they discuss it, you know, and then if they're in a prison, we can connect them to other people that can help them process, pray with them. You know, of course, we're inviting them to other alternatives that the chaplains provide. But there's a lot of good segues for them to get help. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if one of the things we say, starting over begins with me. But, you know, God doesn't care, you know, where you live, but how you live. So if you're not making the change in here, what makes you think you're going to make the change on the outside? And that's why the 52% recidivism takes place, because they're no different when they get out than when they went in.
You could almost ask people going to the church every Sunday that same question. Are you any different on Monday than you are Sunday morning?
I would hope so. I would hope so. Yeah. But I mean, you know, like, you know, it all spins about relationship, and we need support. So when they get out, we try to connect them to churches in this area or Denver or wherever they are to say, here's a good church. And not every church is going to embrace an inmate. So if they're SOs, sexual offenders, you know, the church is going to know who they are. Mm-hmm. But there are some churches here in the city, not, you know, some that wouldn't have one. They wouldn't even allow one of those sex offenders in their church.
So do you go through a lot of spiritual warfare with a ministry like this?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the up and the down is that it wears me out, you know, mentally and emotionally. But the upside, when you see somebody being redeemed and you hear their story, and it's so you can only be explained of who God is and what he does. And then I leave with tears. Mm-hmm. But I do not leave bummed ever when I'm in a prison. I've been in thousands of, you know, prisons different times. And I'm blown away with what God does. And here's the thing. Inside there, as you well know, you don't have to convince them they're sinners. They already know that. That's contrary to the world, right? Mm-hmm. But they know they need something. They may not know if it's Jesus. But when I see that transformation, you know, if it was on the television, it would blow people away. Mm-hmm. Well, you've heard some of those, you know, but it's amazing for me.
1 minute, Mark.
Sure.
Anything you want to say?
Well, could I just ask people if they want to participate with what we do? Is that okay? Well, if you have interest in what we do, and you, Mike had mentioned the numbers, you know, either to volunteer or just want more information, you can go to Starting Over Workshops, plural.com. And there's testimonies and podcasts and pictures of all those 1,500 graduates in all those different prisons, stories, testimonies, endorsements. So that's a way you can connect with us if you'd like to volunteer or help or even to give.
Mm. Well, it's a pleasure to be with a fellow warrior.
Thank you.
I go through the same thing with the warfare, but like you say, when you get the other side and watch God work, it's wonderful.
It is, absolutely. That's all the reward I need.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Michael, thank you.
And thank you, my friends, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.